Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the first episode in 2018 of the Necessary Roughness podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports. As always, I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic. Hope you all had a wonderful New Year's and New Year's Eve celebration. You're off to a hot start in the new year. It's the 6th. There's football coming along today, and thank you for spending part of your weekend and part of your 2018 with us. And we're going to start episode 18, like we start every episode, by breaking down the past week's games. But this week, it's the postseason. First postseason episode. And we're going to break down the end of the regular season a little bit. We're not going to go too into the off-season evaluation yet. We are going to be broadcasting in the off-season. We'll talk about scheduling for that after the Super Bowl, because we still got a few weeks to go in this season, folks. And we're also going to jump straight into the postseason a little bit with looking at injury reports in depth with this week's edition of Nick's Standout 7. I'd like to apologize in advance. I am a little under the weather, so if my voice sounds a bit different, nothing I can really do about it. Bear with me. Thank you so much. Number one in the Standout 7 is Marvin Lewis pulling a Houdini and somehow coming back after rumors were leaked everywhere from ESPN to the end of the world. Every news outlet seemed to say he was on the way out, whether it be him retiring, or him resigning, or them mutually agreeing to part ways. Yet, he got a 2-year contract extension for the 2018 and 2019 seasons. And Lewis said, according to the team, "My job is to win a championship. Marv, you haven't won a playoff game." Goodness gracious, he is the second longest tenured coach in the league. And he has yet to win a playoff game. This could be, quite simply, and I don't want to put it that way, it's the evil you know. He's nothing evil about Marvin, obviously. But you know what I mean. You go with the one you know Marvin's going to give you quality coaching, quality enough, not quality enough to necessarily go out and win a championship, but these players respond to him, and maybe it had to do with that big victory in week 17. They went out there and they played the Ravens quite hard, though as the game went on, they seemed to kind of choke it away. But in the end, they won. They did. They came all the way back. Andy Dalton, phenomenal throw. And then the Ravens just couldn't put together a last second drive. There was a little bit of time left. I think there was 40 seconds or even a minute. And they just couldn't put anything together. And the Ravens are left on the outside looking in. All they had to do was win. All you had to do was follow the train, CJ. All they had to do was beat the mediocre Cincinnati Bengals, a team that always beats themselves, and they couldn't do it. You look on the other side, and we're not going to touch too much on these teams because they're not in the playoffs, and this is a postseason episode. Postseason episode, postseason themed. Anyway, you look at teams like Seattle, who had to win and they needed some help. Seattle took care of business. It's not their fault that the Falcons also won. You look at the Chargers. The Chargers needed some help. They won. But at the end of the day, they needed some help. They didn't get in. So I feel like when you end the season like that, you can be disappointed, and there's certainly things that those two teams can look back on and say, "Hey, we should be in." The Blair Walsh missed field goal against the Falcons for Seattle is certainly that one. He hits that field goal, everything changes there in the playoffs. They're going into Los Angeles today for a divisional rematch instead of going into, Pebble Beach. Nonetheless, you can't look at the ifs and buts, but when you do, you gotta think. John Harbaugh is sitting in his house and he is fuming. He knows they should be out there. He knows they should be in Jacksonville right now. He knows that Jacksonville stomped them, but talent-wise, they're more equipped than Buffalo to beat Jacksonville. Buffalo's offense is mediocre at best. Buffalo is Jacksonville light. Their defense is great, their offense is suspect. They're Jacksonville light. Jacksonville is a better team than them in almost all facets. You look at the fact that the Bills' strength is their running game. The Jags have a stable of running backs. We'll get into injuries because there is one injury doubt in the backfield for Jacksonville. But that being said, Buffalo's coming in with Shady McCoy getting nicked up last week in a game they had to win, so they had to play him. And there's nothing wrong with that. And Shady's a tough guy. He might get a shot in his ankle and play through it. But that being said, there's no question this team goes as far as he goes. So you wonder, can they really pull this off? And I think Baltimore was better equipped. And Baltimore isn't there. Because they couldn't beat Marvin. And now they got two more years of Marvin. Number two of my standout seven. And we said it's a playoff episode. So technically this fits in the drama surrounding the New England Patriots. I'm not going to overanalyze this. I'm not going to go too far into it. If you've watched a litany of sports shows, you've probably seen them break it down almost ad nauseum. Seth Wickersham from ESPN wrote a piece which broke the news that apparently there's a, you know, bit of a strain on the relationship between the big three in New England, Brady, Belichick, and Bob Kraft. I went with Bob to make it three B's. I don't think he would mind anything in the name of alliteration. And then you had reports from places like the Daily News that say Belichick might be interested in taking the Giants coaching job. I think that's all shenanigans, to be honest. It might be possible. He does have a soft spot in his heart for the New York Giants, but that being said, I highly doubt he leaves New England to go to another 40-year-old quarterback. They don't have a future set out. I mean, maybe in an executive role, but the team just hired a GM, so I doubt it. Anyway, the quick gist of it, for those of you that don't know, is apparently Tom Brady was very unhappy with the presence of Jimmy Garoppolo because he could see the writing on the wall and he wants to play forever. And he talked to Bob Kraft, and Kraft told Belichick to get him out of there, which is why they moved him at or around the trade deadline rather than during the draft when his stock was very high. I mean, his stock's been high for a while, but they really didn't get as much as they could have for Jimmy Garoppolo, and you see him playing quite well in San Francisco. People are treating him like the second coming over there. It's insane. You have that, and that put a large strain on it, apparently, because Belichick was, quote, furious. And, of course, these sources are unnamed, and I'd like to say this to the people that say, when they see unnamed sources, they assume that it's shenanigans. As a journalist, you got to understand, it's hard to get people to go on the record against the three most powerful people at their organization. These sources included people on staff for the team. If you're on staff for the team and you go on the record about your boss and the best player on the team and his boss, you are no longer going to be employed by that team. Furthermore, you likely won't be employed by another team. Who's going to hire a guy who's going to run out and talk to the press when there's internal issues? Now, personally, I love it. Come talk to the press, please. We need to know. The world wants to know. Why not let us know? Especially in an organization where they're so closed off and they're so quiet and they have this image of perfection, the fact that there is cracking beneath the surface is quite the intriguing story. So kudos to Wickersham for unearthing such. Now, obviously, no one's perfect, so there had to be something in there. And it's uncertain if this is something which occurs on other teams in the past. People have drawn the comparison to Rodgers and Favre and how Favre didn't like Rodgers, didn't want to help him. Young and Montana was looking over his shoulder. Of course, both of those quarterbacks wound up playing somewhere else. Well, in this one, it seems Brady was looking over his shoulder, and the owner looked over his shoulder too and got his back. Because they traded Brissett, who's a competent NFL quarterback who could be pretty darn good. And then they traded Garoppolo, who a lot of people think could be an elite quarterback. And they had invested a lot of time into coaching up these guys. You assume trading Brissett means Garoppolo was the next guy because Brissett had shown flashes in the preseason. But then you trade them both, and now you got Brian Hoyer as your backup. What if Tom gets hurt in this playoff game? What if Tom blows out his knee? It's about a year recovery time, no? He's out the whole next season. What are you going to do? You know, so you're not going to sign a quarterback because Bob Kraft wouldn't let you sign Garoppolo. Garoppolo apparently was offered a 4-year, $70 million extension, which is insane for a backup quarterback, but shows you how much faith they have in that kid. But he refused it, and a large part of that probably had to do with the fact that he didn't know if he would play the entire duration of that contract. Tom Brady might still be playing 4 years from now. Personally, I think it's about two for him. But you never know. If he keeps performing, he had a solid year. You know, people are looking at him like he's the MVP, and he just might be. But 32 touchdowns doesn't really knock my socks off. Not with the offensive talent surrounding him. 32 touchdowns, Tom's done more with less. People got to calm down with that one. He had less touchdowns than Russell Wilson. Come on now. That being said, the drama is quite intriguing. And on top of that, the last time there was this much drama surrounding the New England Patriots? Well, let's see. I'd say Spygate, and they went 16-0. And then the whole Brady suspension fiasco. And they played pretty darn well then, too. Number three of my standout seven is just a quick recap for you guys and for me to get everything that happened this Black Monday. For those of you who don't know what Black Monday is, it is the first Monday following the conclusion of the regular season, the Monday right after week 17, the final Sunday of the year for a lot of teams, for a majority of the league. And just to run down the board, Jack Del Rio was let go by the Oakland Raiders, and it appears, according to Adam Schefter, that John Gruden is finally poised to come out of retirement for an organization with a soft spot in his heart. And if the reports are accurate, he's getting a mega deal, 10 years, $100 million. That is like nothing I've ever seen for a head coach on the professional level. It is insane. Some reports said it might include an ownership stake in the team, which if you consider how much that could be sold for, John Gruden just made a whole lot of money. Next, we have Chuck Pagano fired in Indy. I'm uncertain. And hold on, let me go back to Del Rio real quick. I don't know why this had to be done. I mean, I guess they underperformed this season. And when you can get a guy like Gruden, and they love Gruden, and I love Gruden, but he hasn't coached in 9 years. I guess they consider Gruden to be an elite head coach, or at least an elite football mind during his retirement, and Del Rio wasn't that for them. We'll never know exactly what was the reason. They had a rough season. I can understand them letting him go. As I was getting into Pagano, it reminded me, I don't know what they expected this season from Chuck Pagano. They were going to fire him a few years ago, if memory serves, and the team missed the playoffs, and they've missed it a few times, but that's not really Pagano's fault when you look at the personnel. You know what I mean? Their offensive line is not great. Their defense is eh. Their skill position players are good. Jack Doyle, Frank Gore still putting up numbers. Frank the Tank. And then you have Hilton and Moncrief out there along with some others. They're good. I wouldn't say they're top tier in the NFL. And I wouldn't say they ever have been really under this regime, if you will. Even under the past GM. Not since Peyton Manning has left, have I really looked at the Colts and said, yeah, they're a contender for a title. So I'm unclear what they were expecting. I guess they want to change the voice, you know, change up who's running the organization. Maybe there's some beef with Irsay going on. But sucks to be Chuck. Speaking of former associates of Peyton Manning, John Fox fired in Chicago, and perhaps they just want a new voice. I don't know. I thought Chicago played pretty decent this year. They were in a lot of those games. Trubisky played all right. He didn't knock your socks off. He didn't come out and wow everyone. You know, it wasn't a Carson Wentz start to the year. It wasn't a Cam Newton start to the year. But he played all right. Maybe it was the fact that they now have Mike Glennon on the team for another 2 years at $15 million apiece. Maybe that'll do it. That being said, I've never been too high on Fox. Fox is a good coach, but I don't know if he's capable of getting you over that hump. But then again, this team isn't looking to get over the hump anytime soon, so I thought Fox was a decent fit. It is what it is. They'll hire someone new. The hope is that there isn't too much lacking continuity so that Trubisky has to learn everything over and his second season essentially becomes another redshirt season or another rookie season. In Detroit, Jim Caldwell was fired. A lot of former Peyton Manning coaches involved in this, coaches and teams. Actually, interestingly enough, all of these coaches can somehow be tied back to Peyton Manning. Del Rio coached in Denver, Pagano coaching in Indy, Fox coached Peyton, Caldwell coached Peyton, and Arians coached Peyton. Wow. Alrighty then. Spoilers on the Arians one. Caldwell fired. It had to be because the team underperformed this season. And Caldwell's yet to really bring them to the promised land, so they're going to need another voice, see if he can bring them the strong leadership they need, I guess. And really, this team has been pretty darn good. High quality play from Matthew Stafford for years. A great receiving core with Eric Ebron, Golden Tate. Galladay played great this season. And Marvin Jones, who was a phenomenal signing when they stole him away from Cincinnati. And you look at their defense, they're talented, but I think they underperformed. It makes sense that you make a coaching change here. Finally, in Arizona, Bruce Arians hanging him up, as is his quarterback, Carson Palmer. And that's really going to shake the foundation of that team, in my opinion. The Cardinals, under him, start in one of those docuseries, and you see how much the team loves him and how much he really galvanizes them. And they're going to need another guy like that. And this brings me back to one of the things I might have said before. I really feel bad for Larry Fitzgerald. Larry has been loyal to that team his whole career, and they haven't helped him out as much as they could have. It's a shame. We'll update these stories as the news comes in, weekly, of course, and we'll discuss any hirings that might go on or any potential coaching candidates. Matt Patricia is one name getting thrown around. Josh McDaniels, Pat Shurmur, the former two are assistants for the New England Patriots, and the third is the OC for the Minnesota Vikings, former Bills head coach Pat Shurmur, former Broncos head coach in McDaniels. Three more pieces of news for the Black Monday recap. Todd Bowles got a 2-year extension from the New York Jets, as did GM Mike Maccagnan. I think this is a great move on the part of re-signing Bowles. I don't think Maccagnan has done all he could do for the team. The Hackettberg move has not worked out, apparently. We don't know. He hasn't gotten to play. Petty's looked mediocre. McCown was a great signing if you were trying to fall out of the top five in the draft, which apparently they were. I guess. They were competitive all season. They played well for Bowles, and that's why I'd say it makes sense to re-sign Bowles. But this team could have been good. They cut a lot of veterans, which made me think they were going to throw it in the tank this season. And they didn't win, obviously, 10 games or anything insane. They missed the postseason, and they will be in the top 10. But that being said, they didn't do as bad as they could have or arguably should have, if they want to fall into place for the two guys we also need to talk about, Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold, the top two quarterback prospects, according to many big boards, including but not limited to Todd McShay and Mel Kiper Jr., declared for the NFL draft this past weekend. The UCLA signal caller is considered by some to be ahead, but he also said he doesn't want to play for Cleveland, and they hold the number one pick, and they might be looking quarterback. Additionally, some say the USC quarterback, Darnold, has a more of a passion for the game and he will be more successful in the long run. So we'll see how that plays out. And the final piece of news is that Hugh Jackson, after an 0-16 season and a 1-31 last 32 games, has a job. Good for Hugh. See, the thing is, Hugh's a good coach. I don't know if Hugh's one of those coaches that could take you to the promised land, but he certainly knows his football. I don't understand how you can go 1-31 and still have a job. I'm sorry. I know the team was expected to be bad. I get it. I really do. But at the same time, 1-31 is not... No, you can't do that. You can't do that on purpose. It's hard to be this bad for this long like the Cleveland Browns franchise has. And the fact that a man went 1-31 and he's still around, listen, good for Hugh. Good on the organization, probably, for realizing the team was that bad. But still, you can't win two games. You couldn't win a game all season. Come on, Hugh. Come on. These are professional football players you're running out there. You couldn't win a single game. And then again, you know, the blame isn't all on him, and I'm not putting it all on him, but still, as the leader of men, the leader of this locker room, you couldn't pull them together and win one game. Be respectable. 1-15 is still awful. It is still disgraceful. But 0-16 is in the record books. Come on, Hugh. Come on, Cleveland. All right, folks. We're not moving on out of the standout seven, obviously. If you're doing the math, we have four left. The third one was just quite long. The last four, we're going to look at the injury reports for the upcoming games, and then we'll get straight into the picks, and obviously the picks are going to go rather quickly because there's only four games this weekend. It is wild card weekend. The first game is at 4:35 today. As I'm recording, it is less than 4 hours away, and as you are hearing this, it is probably less than 2 hours away. If not already played, feel free to watch these after the games. You know, tell me why I'm wrong. Hit me up on Twitter, any social media, at Nick Donatic. Tell me why I'm wrong. Play Captain Hindsight. Lord knows I do. The first game is Titans-Chiefs, and the big injuries here, in my opinion, are DeMarco Murray and Tom Bahali. Now, Murray has been downgraded to out with a knee injury. According to the team, he is out. Quentin Spain, a guard for the team, is also questionable, and that could be a problem. It really, really could. Because they're going to need to rely on Derrick Henry this game. Marcus Mariota is phenomenal, and their receiving core is decent, but this Chiefs defense is great. It is. Even without missing some of those key players, it's still a great defense. And missing Murray is really going to hurt. Murray really helped them in the passing game and the screen game. Henry has showed he has some elusiveness himself, though. He does. Check him the ball and let him gallop. But without Murray, I think it's going to be real hard for this team, which was usually a two-back system, to bring this one home. On the Chiefs front, as I said, Tom Bahali is questionable with a knee injury, which means that even if he plays, his mobility is probably going to be a little bit challenged. And one of the things that's going to need to happen if the Titans are going to win is Marcus Mariota is going to have to play out of his mind. And if they can't keep him in the pocket, it's quite possible he might. You know, last week against the Jaguars, he made one of the most clutch plays I've ever seen from a mobile quarterback. A young mobile quarterback at that. Mariota on 3rd and 5, 2:12 left in the game. They just need a first down to help ice it. He scrambles to his left, cuts back towards the pocket, goes back to his left, hits a defender with the mean stiff arm, and then gallops for the first down. Easy peasy. Like there was no effort at all. It was just backyard football, and it was wonderful. Clutch play. And I'll say this. I'm not going to pick this game right now, though you could probably tell which way I'm leaning. I have a feeling Mariota is going to be one of those guys, one of those Russell Wilson-esque step into the postseason and he's ready to play and he's going to ball out kind of quarterbacks. But this is his first postseason game and they're playing it at Arrowhead, so I'm a little weary, folks. Actually, you know what? Let's combine the standout seven, the conclusion of it at least, with the picks today because we're doing injury reports. Give me the Chiefs in this game. Give me the Chiefs to win it at home. Kareem Hunt had a phenomenal rookie season. I think it continues into this postseason, though this Titans defense can be hard on the run. I think him, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, they've been in the postseason before, minus Hunt, of course. The core of this team, the veteran core, that is, has been in the postseason before. They started the season undefeated. They beat New England. They were ready to dominate. This was their year. Alex Smith was playing out of his mind. And then they tanked the middle half of the season. But now they're back. And while I could easily see this game going the Titans' way, to be completely honest, because I'm never too high on the Chiefs because of Alex Smith. I'm never too high on them. Not that he's accident-prone or injury-prone or any of that. I just don't know if he's the guy that could take you there. I don't know if he can make that big play when you need it most. I've seen him do it in the regular season. In the postseason, I don't know if I've seen it from him. I'm not sold. But I am sold on the talent they have at the skill positions and on their defense and Andy Reid, to be quite honest. And I'll take the Chiefs in this one. Next, and this would be number 5 in the standout 7 for those playing along at home, we have the Rams-Falcons game. And this game is going to be at 8:15 this evening from Los Angeles. First playoff game in Los Angeles since they relocated the Rams there. It didn't take very long. Congratulations to the Rams on that one. And the home team only really has one injury concern, and I'd say it's a rather big one. Mark Barron, safety turn linebacker with elite hit power, solid coverage skills, is not going to play in this game. He has an Achilles injury, and Sean McVay ruled him out on Thursday. Now, this is going to be a problem when they're taking on the Atlanta Falcons. When you consider the fact that the Falcons have a phenomenal backfield, Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman are a two-headed monster which rivals any in this league. And that's what helped them get to the Super Bowl last year and helped them go up 28-3 in the Super Bowl. So when you add that to the fact that the Rams' core and their head coach are in their first ever playoff game, I don't know. It's rough. On the Falcons side of things, Laveen Toilolo, starting tight end, is out this weekend with a knee injury. It says here, according to ESPN.com, that he does not have an injury designation, but he's also listed as out, so we'll call him out. Andy Levitre was placed on injured reserve Tuesday. He is a starting guard for the team. That's a problem, especially against the strong defensive line of this Los Angeles Rams team. Robert Quinn, Aaron Donald, and the like. They rotate him in and out. They've always been good, even under Jeff Fisher, and they're still good. Is this Rams team capable of winning a home playoff game? I certainly think so. I do. I've been high on the Rams all season, so it would be silly for me to pretend like they're not good enough to win this game. Todd Gurley is playing at an MVP level. Jared Goff is playing great. Watkins on the outside, Kupp on the outside, Woods on the outside. They have the talent. They really do. Their defensive front is strong. Even without Barron, I think their defense is pretty darn good. Is their secondary good enough to contain this Falcons offense? That's what I'm not sold on. And here's the thing, folks. As I pick this game, I'm uncertain which Falcons team is going to show up. Because this Falcons team is one of the more talented teams in the league. They didn't lose too many players after their Super Bowl loss. But what they didn't lose in people, they lost in personality. They lost in mentality. They haven't been the same team all year. And it's not hard to notice. There's a reason this team snuck in as the sixth seed. And they didn't go out and dominate like the Panthers did, like the Saints did. It's only a 1-2 game difference in the standings. I know. Trust me, I know, folks. But you could see it in them. They're not the same. But I will say this. Having listened to experts, quote-unquote experts, and analysts and former players talk, they say that after the playoff hangover, you need to get back to the playoffs to shake it off, to really rededicate. And I'm going to pick Atlanta to pull the mild upset in this one. I think Atlanta's going to go on the road. They're going to go into L.A., and they're going to show that they've been there before, and they're still angry about that Super Bowl loss. They're not sad. They're not Debbie Downer anymore. Now they're angry, and they smell revenge. They see New England over there. They see them as the one seed in the opposing conference in the AFC. They know that New England is likely walking into the AFC championship game untouched. They know they have to grind as the sixth seed, like the Giants and the Steelers of old. And I think they're ready to do it. Give me the Falcons in this game, and what's going to be a good one. The 105 kick on Sunday, the first and only 105 kick, is Bills at Jaguars, the Doug Marrone Bowl. Herbert H. Lehman High School alumni, Doug Marrone. Doug the man. This is a tough game because going in, as we're looking at the injury report, LeSean McCoy is the biggest name on this entire injury report for the weekend, in my opinion. LeSean McCoy is the offense for the Bills, and he is questionable. It was believed that he might not play earlier in the week, and now as we get closer to game time, he's kind of saying he might, you know, take a shot and try and give it a go. Listen, I don't know if there's a Willis Reed situation where he'll go out there and motivate everyone. I love LeSean McCoy. He's talented. He's a phenomenal player. But Willis Reed had Clyde Frazier out there, and Clyde killed it. Who's the Clyde Frazier for this Bills team? I don't know if there is one. I don't think they're talented enough at their other skill positions, and their offensive scheme is good enough to win the game. Jacksonville's defense, I'm going to say it again, they've overperformed all season. They outperformed any expectations anyone in the league had as an entire team. The concern for me as we look at their injury report, Marquise Lee is out. He's listed as questionable according to this, but ESPN lists him as out, so we're going to go with out. TJ Yeldon is sick, but he's questionable. I think Yeldon will be out there. It's his first playoff game. They need him out there. He'll be out there, which means they'll have their full stable of running backs, Ivory, Yeldon, and starting running back Leonard Fournette, who is contending for the Rookie of the Year. So they'll all be there. And this Bills defense is good. I've said it earlier. I think the Bills are a poor man's Jacksonville Jaguars. A questionable offense with some talented pieces. and a defense which is, for the most part, this season, played out of its mind. You know, they really have. And McDermott's done a great job in Buffalo. He's turned them around, so to speak. And I like Tyrod. I really do. But there's only so many times I can say I like a player if they're not going to go out and make a tangible difference. I'm not saying Tyrod's played awful. But if you look at his stats on the season, he has certainly not played well. And it's not all his fault. The receiving core is not great. But even after acquiring Kelvin Benjamin, their numbers have not peaked up that much to the point where I would say, yeah, this team can contend for a Super Bowl. If they're going to do it, it's going to be, you know, the old defense carries you there that way. Can they do that and win in Jacksonville? Yes, most definitely. They can apply pressure to Blake Bortles. They can force Bortles to make mistakes. And when Bortles makes mistakes, the Jaguars start to come down in levels of morale, and they'll feel it. They'll see the writing on the wall. That being said, I think Marone is going to do a great job of keeping the ball out of Bortles' hands. I think this is going to be a Fournette game. This is going to be a Yeldon game, an Ivory game. I think this is going to be a running back-driven game. Even more so if Shady McCoy plays. I think this game might finish before 4 o'clock. They're going to be running the ball so much. It might. Keep your eyes out. So who do I have in this running back's wet dream? Well, I'm going to have to take the home team. And it might be deep down driven by my love for Tom Coughlin and Doug Marone. But in actuality, Jacksonville's just a better team. If you look at them skill position-wise, they have more talent, and I think Bortles can do just enough to win them this game. Now, I am willing to admit, he could also do more than enough to win the Bills this game. But I have faith, and I think Jacksonville, for the first time in years, is going to win a home playoff game. Our final part of the standout seven, and it's also our final pick. Look at how perfectly that lined up. It's almost like it's planned out. This might be the best wild card weekend game. Now, I would argue all these games are good. Bills-Jaguars, I think, is the worst one, and it's only because it's a defensive struggle. It could easily end 6-5. Clearly, that's an exaggeration, but you know what I mean. Seriously, if you opened the paper on Monday and saw that game ended 6-5, would you be surprised? I wouldn't. Titans-Chiefs, potential to be a great game. Could also be a two-possession game. It could. I think the Chiefs are that good when they turn it on. Falcons-Rams could be a shootout, but we want this Panthers-Saints. This is the third game. They're playing a best-of-five, you know. This is the third game they're facing each other this year. The Saints won both two previous games. And on the injury report, the biggest name for the Saints is Teron Armstead. Starting tackle Teron Armstead is not going to be available in this game. Couple of the other names, Garrett Griffin, tight end, David Perry, defensive tackle, Michael O'O Manawanui of New England Patriots fame with maybe 10 catches over there, and Trey Hendrickson, the D end. The biggest name on here, Teron Armstead. Armstead is a good to great offensive lineman, and he's listed as questionable. ESPN has him as out. He's out. So you wonder, how is the Panthers' pass rush going to capitalize on the fact that Teron Armstead isn't playing? Are they going to send more blitzes? Are they going to send more pressure? Well, the bigger question is, how is Drew Brees going to adjust? Because you know this team loves to run screens to Kamara and even to Ingram. They love to throw those short passes, get the ball in Michael Thomas's hands, get the ball in Ted Ginn's hands against his old team, especially with Ladarius Gunter and Kurt Coleman not playing in this game, corner and safety respectively. That's going to challenge the depth of this Panthers secondary. And against the Saints, that's not something you want to do. You know, Drew Brees didn't throw for 30 touchdowns this season. That doesn't mean he still isn't Drew Brees. He can still go out there and fling the ball like anyone else. Is he going to do that this weekend? I think he might. I think he might go out there and go a little crazy. The running game is great, but when it's not there, it's nice to have a Hall of Fame quarterback to lean on. As for the Panthers side of things, we talked about Gunter and Coleman. Big names that I think won't be here. Matt Khalil, or Khalil. Uncertain how to say his name. I would lean Khalil, but I've heard Khalil, so I'll do both. Matt, the offensive tackle, is questionable. And Trey Turner, the guard, is also listed as questionable despite playing in practice all week. He has a concussion. He's listed here as out. So that's potentially two offensive linemen for the Carolina Panthers out against this Saints defense, which has been ferocious. And the Panthers like to run the ball. So when you're missing two offensive linemen, kind of hard to get a good running game going. And I'm going to put it out there. I'm not high on Cam right now. Cam's a talented player, one of the most talented players in the league in terms of full skill set. He can run. He can throw. He has the intelligence to read the field. He can be a great quarterback when he's on. I don't think he's been on 4 weeks. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the lack of skill players around him. He's got Christian McCaffrey. He's got Curtis Samuel, who doesn't get the ball too much, former Ohio State Buckeye. You know, Devin Funchess is their number one wideout. I'd say Devin Funchess has a similar skill set to that of Kelvin Benjamin. He's not as good in my book, but, you know, a little bit of a slower guy, but he's got good hands. He can jump. He can snag the ball out of the air. Similar skill sets, which means it makes sense why Benjamin became expendable. When you have someone with a similar skill set, you got to pick one. You could run them both out there and just throw jump balls all game, which would have been fun to watch, but clearly that's not what they opted for. Greg Olsen's there. Greg's coming back from a foot injury. It's unclear how great he's going to be, but it's the postseason. Greg shows up when it matters. I think Greg will play pretty well. Probably snag 6, 8, 10 balls this game. Might be their leading receiver. McCaffrey will make an impact. We've seen him make an impact in big games. A few years ago in his bowl game at Stanford, I think it was his second to last season, the man went bonkers. And I don't know. This is going to be a really good game, but I got to take the Saints. Saints at home. And the thing everyone's overlooking is that Drew Brees and Sean Payton are a dynamic duo, which at one point was thought to have rivaled Brady Belichick. Not in terms of accomplishments, but in terms of skill and poise and talent. Sean Payton, I don't know if he will be, is one of the best coaches in the league. I was going to say, I don't know if he will be a Hall of Famer. Drew Brees is certainly a Hall of Famer, but Drew's only got one ring. He's one for one. I think Drew wants a second one. He hasn't been in the postseason in years, and I think he is itching to show the football world that he still got it. And I think Drew Brees goes out and beats the Panthers at home, and they go into next week, and there they will take on the Minnesota Vikings. All right, folks, that brings us to the end of the Standout 7 and simultaneously the end of the picks. I just want to mention this because I didn't get to my transition. We had a pretty good inaugural regular season, guys. We really did. You know, we went 155 and 102, which isn't the greatest in the world. But if you saw a head coach getting fired and he went 155 and 102, what would you say? So, yeah, it's kind of weird, you know? Yeah, he was pretty good. That's a pretty darn good season, man. And I'm proud of what we did. I'm glad that you guys came along for the ride. I hope this is just the beginning. I'm not going anywhere. I hope you're not going anywhere. We won 60% of our games. I think we know what we're doing a little bit here. And if we look back, and you know I do, I think we missed maybe 3 games because we didn't start picking Thursday games. We missed the first game. You know, week 6 we struggled. There was a couple of upsets that week. You know, we had a couple 9-7s, but we had a 4-12 week, and that really frustrates me. We'll try to work on that next season. But if you look at it, how many double-digit win weeks did we have? Week 1, 10-5. Week 2, 11-4. Week 4, 10-5. Week 7, 10-5. Week 8, 11-2. Week 10, 11-3. Week 12, 11-5. Week 16, 11-5. Week 17, 10-6. That's pretty good. The 2 4-12s dragged us down. You look at that. That's a 16-game negative spike. 16 games negative. We were 53 games positive. Could have been 69. Could have been 69 games positive. It's all right. We'll get him next year. But we're not done. We picked the playoffs games. Let's see how we do in the postseason. Let me know who you think is going to win in the comments on whatever you're listening to this on or on social media, like I say in every episode. Hit me up. Let me know how this show is. Feedback is always welcome and appreciated, even if it's bad. Tell me I'm awful, please. Thank you. At Nick Donatic. As always, folks, thanks for joining us. I hope you're ready to enjoy what should be a darn good football weekend and a pretty damn good postseason, if I say so myself. And I will say I'm hoping for it. It was a good season. Hoping for a great end of the season. As we end every episode, I'm Nicholas Donatic, signing off.